This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. We'll get on the Buffalo Sabres page coming up in hour two. They fired their head coach, Don Granato, earlier today. We'll get on that one with Mike Gugliello from the Hockey News. In the meantime, you know, depending on the way things break here in the next couple of days, the Los Angeles Kings will either face off against the Edmonton Oilers or the Dallas Stars in the opening round. Daryl Evans, a longtime analyst for the Los Angeles Kings, joins me now. Daryl, how are you today, sir?
Absolutely wonderful. Getting ready for some playoff hockey.
You and me both. But there's a lot of intrigue still to go. Like, how would you, like, we're following this East, you know, this turtle race, you know, teams going backwards outside of the Islanders who go 8-1-1 to wrap up the third of the Metropolitan. Things kind of crawled along there as no one seemed to want any spot in the Eastern Conference. How would you describe what we've seen in the West? Because it's quite different. It's kind of like what the East was last year.
Yeah, it has changed quite a bit. You know, the parity in the NHL just continues to keep getting greater and greater each year. The West has been interesting. You look at the push that the St. Louis Blues made for the last few weeks, and they fell a little bit short. But, you know, it's been really interesting to see the way it's all played out. The jockeying for the top positions has gone, you know, basically down to the wire. So
yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot of interesting matchups. I always look at the first round of the playoffs as the hardest round, because everybody's trying to get settled in, and I kind of get a little bit of a groove going because it's a whole different platform from the regular season. So it'll be interesting to see the way it all plays out, but there's still a couple of big games left to make final decisions.
Absolutely. And I know that picking your opponent is always a dangerous game to play. There are many that were wondering about, you know, the Boston Bruins game last night against the Capitals and how much effort Boston was really throwing into that one. It is a dangerous game to play, but I'm curious about matchups. Like, Los Angeles Kings will either face off against the Edmonton Oilers, which we've seen plenty, or the Dallas Stars, depending on how things break. How do the Kings match up with both these two teams this season?
Well, with the Edmonton Oilers, there's definitely a lot of familiarity, having played each other for the last 2 years in the playoffs. They've played a lot in the regular season. And I think it's a real pretty even matchup. You know, I think there's favors on either side. But I think it would be one heck of a series as that comes around.
Oh, yeah.
With Dallas, I know a lot of people think that it's a little bit on the lopsided things, with Dallas having won the season series in a pretty handily fashion. Being said that, the Kings on two of the three games, they were at the end of a road trip, a little fatigue set in, but that's not an excuse. But I'd be interested really to see that series the way it plays out. I think the Kings are poised to play some real solid playoff hockey. I think they've got the right elements. The defensive part of their game is their strongest part. Mm-hmm. Their penalty kill is very strong. But in saying that, they've got to find a way to create some offense while doing that, because Dallas has got a lot of offensive players. They've got depth throughout their lineup. And we all know about the Edmonton Oilers, how they're heavily favored up front with the firepower that they have. So it's going to be a matter of defense versus offense on both sides of things.
You know, it would be easy to, Daryl, to manufacture some good old-fashioned hockey hatred for the Edmonton Oilers. Every time these two teams match up, we get a glimpse of that. How do they bring that same type of hatred if it ends up being the Dallas Stars?
Well, I think it's pretty easy. I think they've got a lot to prove against Dallas. They don't like the way the season series went. I think it'll take maybe a game or two, you know, a little bit of a feeling out process. Mm-hmm. And then it goes from there. Then it becomes a chess match, the game-to-game adjustments that each team's coaching staff makes. And, you know, the kind of the relationships that are made on the ice, you know, who's getting underneath each other's skin the most and the way the games are officiated. So I think either way, it's going to be a pretty physical series, tight checking.
Yeah.
And opportunities are going to be, you know, at a premium.
I really do think, Daryl, like, regardless of who the Kings face off against here, I think one of the things we're all curious about is, how is Quentin Byfield going to do in the postseason? Like, we talk about most improved players a lot on this program, and we talk about, you know, Quentin Byfield and Seth Jarvis, and you got to throw Lucas Raymond into that conversation of 31 goals now, and Thomas Harley and Yuri Slafkovsky, et cetera. You know this. You played in the NHL. You know regular season versus postseason. You follow the game. You know how it changes. Come playoffs, what is Quentin Byfield in store for, and how do you think he's equipped for it?
Well, he's in store for a battle. You know, he's had, you know, pretty good taste, you know, for the last year and a half playing on the line with Kopitar and Kempe. He's been playing against the opposition's top players. It's going to get ramped up again another notch, being that he's had a little trouble putting the puck in the net for the last, basically 6 weeks. There's an expectation. They need him to contribute. I think he's maybe lacking a little bit of that confidence right now. He's not shooting the puck like he was earlier. And I know that both his line mates and whoever's line mates are in the coaching staff, they encourage him to do that more and more. So hopefully he can find that level. Mm-hmm. But I think he's at the point now where his game's not just a one-dimensional game. I think he can be a contributor even in the postseason, just getting in there, working the pucks along the boards, keeping plays alive in the offensive zone. He's playing a complete 200-foot game, but he's got to continue to keep playing heavy. And when the opportunities arise, he's got to find a way to find the back of the net as well.
Kopitar's won Stanley Cups. Drew Doughty's won Stanley Cups. We know what to expect from them come playoff time. Philip Deneau is tremendous in the playoffs, and that goes back to his days with the Montreal Canadiens. But who do you think, who do you think the spotlight is on for the Los Angeles Kings? Like the players that you're curious about, okay, let's see how they react here in the postseason.
I think one has to be Dubois. Yeah. You know, the Kings fans have been waiting for him to break out through the course of the year. We've seen glimpses of it. And let's face it, this is the time of year that the Kings got him. They acquired him to give them the depth that they need in the postseason. So this is his time to shine, so to speak. If he brings that edge to his game, the physicality, the reach, the heaviness, I think he's going to do all right. But he's got to do it consistently. And hopefully, over the last little while, he's built up some of that confidence to do that.
How have things been different under Jim Hiller?
I think just a fresh voice. Tom McClellan over 5 years with the team. And really, Jim hasn't changed much, and he'll be the first one to tell you that. Mm-hmm. But I think when it comes from a different voice, it reminds me a little bit when the Kings, when Daryl Sutter came on board, Terry Murray, there were a lot of the same messages. There was a new voice that came in there. And Daryl Sutter was the recipient of a team that felt they were responsible for a coach losing a job. And I think that's the same case again with the Kings. Like Tom McClellan. They liked the way he coached. His systems were good. They were effective. But unfortunately, he was removed from his position. And I think all of a sudden, Jim Hiller, he's got their, undivided attention. And they're looking to kind of, redeem themselves. So he's done a really good job. He's made him maybe a little bit more aggressive in the checking part of the game. Mm-hmm. And I know he's really pushed guys blocking shots. Those are a couple of subtle little things that I've seen noticeable differences in the two coaches.
With Darrell Evans, analyst for the Los Angeles Kings, he'll either face the Oilers or the Stars come playoff time. So here's one of the things that I wonder about. I think generally we make our minds up too early about young hockey players. And listen, Quinton Byfield's a great example of that. How many times did you hear, the Kings should have taken Stützle, and he's a wash, and he's a bum, he's not going to make, blah, 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 blah. He's great. And they're talking about him now, like, could he make Team Canada? Like, that's how much, Byfield has improved. It may have taken him a little bit longer than people expected, but getting there, do you have a thought or two on Akil Thomas, who's got, 3 goals in 6 games so far for the Kings? Do you have a thought on Thomas?
Yeah, I do. And, just before I mention Akil Thomas, I think a great example that the Kings just went through, and I think why they showed so much patience with a guy like Byfield, is Adrian Kempe. You look at how long it took him to kind of get to his stride, and then he had, 35 and 41 goal seasons. He's an outstanding player. I think with Akil Thomas, I think over the time that he's had the injuries over the last couple of years, he's really matured both on and off the ice. I think he's got a really good understanding as what he needs to do as a player. Maybe when he's 2 or 3 years younger, maybe you kind of revert back to playing, like whether you're in college or junior, and, try to do that kind of stuff. But I think he's learned to play a pro game, and he plays within his means. He brings an edge to his game, and he appreciates every shift that he's got. So hopefully he can stay healthy, because if he can, I think the Kings got themselves a pretty good player that can be a steady guy in the lineup night in and night out.
Canadian hockey fans, don't forget, the World Juniors, he was the hero, he was the star, and it's great to see him on the big stage in the NHL. Darryl, thanks so much for this. Continued success with the Kings, and listen, we'll all be watching with great curiosity here, A, who the Kings face off against, and B, how well they do. Thanks as always, Darryl. You be well.
All right, keep up the great work, great show, and I look forward to catching up with you soon.
We'll talk soon. Darryl Evans is the analyst for the Los Angeles Kings, legend, former King himself. Great player. Still in, by the way, Matt Marchese, remarkably good shape. Like, I always love the guys, and Rick Dudley is one of these people who, in the game, still go out of their way to take care of themselves. I remember Todd Warner telling me stories when he was in Tampa with with Dudley, and he would go into the gym, and Dudley would have like 90s or 95s he's doing shoulder press with. Still, like, even though he's out of the game, he's still in remarkable shape. And Darrell Evans is clearly one of those guys too, whether it's working out, whether it's running marathons. Evans keeps himself in fantastic shape.
Yeah, he puts the young guys like me to shame. And he's got a great mustache.
That can be you too. Well, yeah, you do have, you give him a run for the mustache. But
no, that Darrell Evans one is, I mean, it's a good one. It's
good.
It's very good. The Kings, though, like, they're so fascinating to me because you when you look at that lineup and you look top to bottom and you say, that team should score more goals than they do. And for whatever reason, it's coaching, it's, you know, stylistically.
How about 1-3-1?
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest problem.
That's the big one.
But it's almost a wonder. I mean, I know why they do it, because they don't have any confidence in their goaltending. That's what it comes down to. And their defense, while it is good, it is not among the best in the NHL. And that's where I think part of the issue lies. But it's a team that can score, just stylistically. They're not a super fun watch.
No, they've never been accused of being that. Having said that, if you look for a first round opponent for the Los Angeles Kings, and again, I know we've already seen it a couple of different times. You might be thinking here, can we mix it up a little bit? Can we see something? I would still love to see Edmonton and LA again. Just because, like, I don't know if people have forgotten just how intense and at times violent and nasty those games were. Like, you don't want to see that again? I know I do, Maddie.
Love me some nastiness in the playoffs. I think we need more of that. That's why I'm hoping that that's what the first round matchup is. Because
yeah,
I don't envision a scenario in which LA is going to get out of the first round. Like, if they play Dallas, I don't think that they're going to beat them. And then that matchup is out the window. But I would love to see that in the first round. I think you want, Jeff, I know in this world we don't want hate, but in hockey, we want hate.
Kelly Rudy talks about this, a healthy dose of hockey hatred.
It's good for everybody.
It's fine.
It's good for everybody.
The handshake line is supposed to cool all of that off. Although, you know, there are a lot of people, and Kelly was one of them, who, you know, never a big fan of the handshake line. We'll talk about that as the playoffs arrive. Thoughts on handshakes after a series. Not for everybody. Not for everybody.
Nope.
One thing I want to ask you here before we get to the sports interaction quickly segment here. Connor McDavid and 100 assists.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you put that? Here's the way I want to frame it. Maybe we can discuss this more at the top of the hour. What is more impressive to you, 70 goals or 100 assists? And I'll frame it this way.
Mm-hmm.
McDavid joins a group that has only included three people.
Yeah.
Or 66, 99. That's it.
Those are literally the three greatest players that have played this game.
I didn't say Nick Lidstrom.
Oh, here we go. Okay. Three of the four greatest players that played the game, Jeff.
Good.
Sorry.
Right,
it's a really intriguing question, because the hardest thing to do in the NHL is score goals. But, you know, 100 assists, it's a lot of assists. The only thing is, does it diminish if a second guy does it in the same year?
Nope.
Okay.
Not at all. I just look at it historically and say, you know, three of the greatest, 4,
yep.
66, and 99, were the only ones for the longest time.
And now we're going to add McDavid and Kucherov potentially to that list.
Now we're going to have five.
Now we're going to add all, like, the tradition, the 4 and the 66 and the 99, 97 and 86 look really weird in there, people. Something's not right.
Get used to it. Get used to the race car numbers. Listen, the 66 was an odd number. 99
was, but then it was for so long, it was like, oh, every kid wants to wear 66 or 99.
No, it's funny, too, because we kind of always look at 99. I don't know if this is the way when you grew up as well. 99 was always sacred, even in, like, minor hockey as well. Like, oh, what are you doing wearing Gretzky's number?
Yeah, no.
We could throw on 66, and it's cool. You could throw on any other number.
I think I wore it as a joke once, like, in some, because it was a jersey that was there, and I put it on as a joke. I would never wear it because, oh, yeah, look at that guy. They look at you for the wrong reasons.
All right, time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local. There's a huge one on the calendar tonight, Matt Marchese, and we have it on Sportsnet.
We do. It's the Capitals at the Flyers. Puck line is Flyers -1.5. The over has hit in 6 of the last 8 between these two in Philadelphia. Washington, 3-7 straight up in their last 10. Philadelphia, 2-8 straight up in their last 10. And not one of those things matters because it is a win and potentially you're in.
So here's the one thing I wonder. We've talked a lot about Coach of the Year this season. We focus a lot around Rick Tocchet, deserves it. Andrew Burnett deserves it as well. We talked a lot about John Tortorella as well. Now, if the Washington Capitals win this game, do we not include Spencer Carberry in that conversation?
Sure do.
Carberry gets this Washington Capitals team in. And by the way, Capitals win in any fashion tonight, they are in. They control the destiny. They can slay the Red Wings. They will be the team for Wild Card 2. Sorry, Pittsburgh. Sorry, Detroit. This could be them. Where do we put Spencer Carberry? Tune in tonight. This one should be fascinating. You might see the Flyers pull their goaltender with a couple of minutes left if it's tied. That's Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book. Bet local. Tour around the NHL. More on Buffalo and the Firing coming up in moments.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Welcome to Hour 2. Joined in studio by Matt Marchese. We'll be talking about the Philadelphia Flyers here in a second. Pause on that because at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk more about the Buffalo Sabres coaching situation. If you missed it earlier today, Kevin Adams announcing they have relieved Don Granato from his head coaching position. He searches on for another head coach. You will hear names like Seth Appert, who coaches the Rochester Americans of the American Hockey League, and you will also hear Lindy Ruff's name, but I don't think that those are the only two that will be bandied about. We'll get into this with Mike Ajello coming up at the bottom of the hour. Mike writes for the Hockey News, and we'll go a little more in-depth on what's next for the Buffalo Sabres. In the meantime, Matty Marchese. So, it's always nice when things that we wonder about on programs like this make their way to the lips of reporters. And we start to hear questions that we wonder about on the air, asked to the people who can provide answers. So, to that end, guess what John Tortorella was asked about this morning?
Oh, I could take a guess. I wonder if it has something to do with the goalie pull.
If you're tied like tonight with the Capitals and a few minutes left in the third period, would you pull your goaltender? Well, here is John Tortorella's answer.
John, there's a situation tonight where you might have to your goalie, I'm assuming, in the third period of a tie game.
Yes.
Do you have a time, maybe, when you're going to do that? Are you going to be maybe a little more eager to do it, given the second circumstances?
No, I'm going to read the game. We'll go from there. Definitely. Yeah. There's no... I'm not going to get a slide rule out here. We're going to play the game. Hopefully, we're ahead. But if we're not, obviously, the circumstances dictate that we've got to try to win in regulation. So we'll make the call as the game goes on.
I was thinking about the time. That was the one thing, like, what is the time?
Well, if it's Patrick Watt, it's going to be the start of the third period. So this is John Tortorella here. So we're not going to get crazy. But, I mean, what if they're down a puck? At what point do you pull?
I don't think...
We're just thinking tied. Like, what if they're down, like, one goal? What if they're down two goals?
Yeah, that's true. What if they're down three goals?
Like, honestly,
We could go down the list. Like, if you're down four goals, you're still trying to play for your season. Because it doesn't matter if you lose by four or eight.
100%.
Doesn't matter.
Does not matter. Point. Like, could we see them down by three goals starting the third period and there's no goalie? That both goalies are sitting on the bench.
I feel like the third period, three goals down, I can't see that. Like, you give yourself, I think, 5 minutes to maybe get one back. And then I think that question starts to become a little bit more relevant.
How light do Flyers players go down to try to draw penalties?
Like Italian soccer players.
My goodness.
Touched and whew, you're done.
Bring out the magic spray.
Yellow card. As my dad's dad used to call it, Los Spruits. The spray, the magic spray.
What is it, Los Spruits?
He called it Los Spruits.
Oh, I love it. So we'll see tonight. I mean, it should be a fascinating one. The Washington Capitals control their destiny here. If they win, they're in and everybody else is out. We're talking about Wild Card 2 here, and now we have the conversation about a team that has a goal differential of minus 38 making the playoffs.
Yeah, that is something that it's fascinating to me because
to all of us,
that you just, it shouldn't happen that way. It just shouldn't. And you and I joked about this last night. So a team with that kind of a goal differential gets in. We want to let more in?
Oh, no, listen, I agree with you. Like, I every time I check with anyone in the NHL, I always get the same answer. Nobody here has an appetite to expand it. This is strictly a media phenomenon.
It's only an Elliot Friedman.
Trust me, nobody talks about this. None of us here talk about this. This gets no concert. This gets no audience. nobody talks about it except you guys. He said, listen, we already let half the league in. Is that not enough?
Well, just wait till they add two more teams and then you're not. Then you're going to have to add another team from each side.
But then at what point do you say, like, okay, like how much do you want to extend the season?
Well, no. That can't be. If anything, they need to shorten the season.
Uh-huh.
Like they need to go to 74. I think that's probably
that is not
the right
gonna, that will
It'll
be,
never
on.
Happen.
The moment the players signed off on salary linkage, that moment,
yeah.
The idea of going less than 82
never
vanished.
Never happened.
And so don't even have the conversation about it. They're going to knock down because the owners don't want it and the players don't want it.
Oh, no.
Because their salaries are tied to that.
Yeah, no.
If anything, they'll add more games.
Yeah, which to me is.
It's going the other way.
Yeah, let's just do the baseball. Let's go to 162.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's go the complete opposite direction. Let's go 162, Jeff.
Well, then what's the salary cap going to be?
200 million.
The rate of attrition will be enormous.
It's going to be like Dr. Evil, where he says a bunch of numbers that don't actually exist. That's going to be the salary cap.
What's on your mind today, Matty?
Okay. I wanted to ask you this question.
Okay.
Because with the Buffalo job now available.
Yes.
I mean, there's other stuff on the ice that we want to talk about, but there's three jobs that I look at and say are oddly similar.
Okay.
I think that Buffalo, I think that Ottawa, and I think that New Jersey are very similar jobs in terms of where they are in their development, the players that they have on the roster in terms of star power, the fact that none of them can play defense and none of them can goaltend at this point. What is the most intriguing job of those three? Because I know you and I off the air, we kind of mentioned St. Louis, but to me, St. Louis is in a different part of their development because they haven't blown it up like the other two teams already, or other three teams already have.
Yeah.
And there is an influx of young talent that's coming, but it's further away than what's already present in Buffalo, New Jersey, and Ottawa.
Okay, so of those three, mm-hmm. you mentioned New Jersey, Ottawa, and Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Of those three, two have the same issue. Ottawa and New Jersey have the same issue, and that is goaltending.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you're Steve Staios, that's prime concern, obviously. And if you're Tom Fitzgerald, not exactly a secret. He was looking for a goaltender, and we all know who that is.
Feels like for 2 years he's been looking for a goaltender.
Well, and his name rhymes with Jacob Markstrom.
Smakeb Parkstrom?
So
is he a new guy? I don't know.
Those two teams have, and the reason I bring that up is there are a lot of coaches that when they look at jobs, when they look at new positions, the first thing they consider is, who's my goaltender?
Yeah. They don't know.
Because the coaching position is most closely aligned with the goaltender.
Correct.
Spencer
Carberry. Even though they know nothing about it.
Spencer Carberry is tightly aligned this year with Charlie Lindgren.
Correct.
Right? It's the old saying. You know, Elaine Vigneault would always say, hockey's easy. If my goalie's better than your goalie, I win. If your goalie's better than my goalie, you win. There's the old saying, if you have a goalie, it's 70% of your team. If you don't, it's 100. There's a lot of cliches. Ned Harkness used to say, the old Detroit Red Wings coach, used to say, we need to change the name of the game to goalie because that's really what this whole thing comes down to. Don't call it hockey, call it goalie.
Yeah, show me a good goalie, I'll show you a good coach.
There's a lot of people who still maintain that the Hart Trophy, by definition, should always go to a goaltender.
Are you speaking on behalf of yourself?
You know how I feel about Connor Hellebuyck this year.
I do.
But I've thrown Shesterkin in their mix.
Voted for him.
I did.
2 years ago, right?
I did.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, maybe you are the jinx because he hasn't been the same goaltender since.
No, the 32 Thoughts podcast is the jinx. People come on our show and then all of a sudden their careers tailspin. So I look at Ottawa and I look at New Jersey and say that they have a similar issue here that they need to fix the goaltending.
Okay.
Buffalo Sabres, I see one of the main issues here is it's not goaltending.
Structure.
Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is great. Devon Levi is going to be great. They're going to be fine. I don't know about the dynamic of going with those two as your 1A, 1B next season, but I think that that's what they're going to go with. But I don't worry about the goaltending with the Buffalo Sabres. I do with Ottawa. I do with the New Jersey Devils. With the Buffalo Sabres, I worry about, like, they're going to have a pendulum effect here with the next coaching hire. It's going to be someone who's tougher. Mm-hmm. It's going to be someone who's more firm. We know that. But also, I think with the Buffalo Sabres is They have a lot of kids. So the big question is, what's your veteran mix? And I think the Buffalo Sabres are going to look at bringing in veterans that aren't shy about pushing back and saying, yeah, you know what? This sucks. This is wrong. We shouldn't be doing this. No. This is the way we need to do things. I think that they'll look to bring in more players like that as they look to change their veteran. Like the Kalaposo is not there anymore, right? He's gone. He's in Florida. I think that one of the big things is which veterans are they going to bring in and how is this team going to be made accountable by whichever coach comes in? Which one is more intriguing? I think New Jersey's closer to being a playoff team than the other two. I mean, they were last year and they won a series. Beat the Rangers.
I guess I should have phrased the question of if you have a two-year window, because nobody's going in. I mean, I highly doubt that anybody going into any of those three teams is a one and done. Like, it would have to be an unmitigated disaster for them to be a one and done.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, maybe it's a two-year window. Does that change your answer at all? Probably not, right?
No, not at all. Look, New Jersey's a good team.
They just beat the Rangers last year. Like, we do forget about that.
New Jersey had really bad injuries.
Yep.
Dougie Hamilton, top of that list, Jack Hughes, et cetera, and they couldn't get a save.
And they couldn't get a save last year and made the playoffs. Like, that part hasn't really changed either. So I guess you're probably correct in your assessment. Like, the other two teams have proven absolutely nothing. At least New Jersey has proven something. There's just, I mean, I think they're all kind of close in terms of the intrigue with the job.
Yeah. You know what I was asked yesterday?
What's that?
Let me open it up to another team.
Sure.
I was having a conversation with someone yesterday who said to me, if the Detroit Red Wings don't make the playoffs, do you think that there will be consequences? Now, first of all, I don't think Steve Yzerman's going anywhere.
No.
Considering we still haven't seen a lot of his draft picks with the big team here, even though the hue and cry around Detroit is we need to speed up this rebuild here,
mm-hmm.
right? We need to move things along here. We need to get some veteran players, and that's why we've seen Steve Yzerman go on shopping sprees, free agent shopping sprees in the last couple of off seasons.
But those felt like those were weird spending sprees, though. Those were the, what do they call those? The impulse purchases at the end of the, like while you're about to get your real groceries.
Well, a lot of the real groceries are still in Grand Rapids.
Exactly. So the other ones were impulse buys. It's like, oh, I need this. I need this.
But I just
it's like,
think
do
they
you
want,
really need that?
I just think they've spent enough time in the basement. And I think they wanted to see some growth
Just get a little bit better.
They have a brand new rink that hasn't seen the postseason.
And by the way, last night was a very good indication of getting
that.
In there.
Pause on that. So I think you'll see the same thing in Montreal one day when mm-hmm. they're good and consistently good. But yeah, you saw it in Detroit yesterday.
Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome. I made a comment on it. I had to.
Nuts.
Yeah.
Last night.
It was fun.
When Lucas Raymond scored the game tying goal and then the game winner in overtime on a gorgeous, by the way, that pass from Dylan Larkin, that's a tough pass.
Sure is.
That's a real hard pass because there's back pressure
mm-hmm.
on Lucas Raymond and he feathers it perfectly. And then Raymond makes the perfect shot. Larkin's awesome. Spoiler. That place, like the proverbial cork out of a champagne bottle.
Yes.
Huge pop.
But it's almost like it's been building because they've been waiting to play in a game like that for so long.
Well, it's because they've been teased for a couple of years. Don't forget, last year, a lot of Red Wings fans thought that they were going to the playoffs, and I thought the Red Wings thought that they were going to the playoffs until what happened? They dropped two to the Ottawa Senators before a trade deadline.
Those front-runner Senators.
Forget it. Well, it happens every year.
I know.
It happens every single year.
I know.
And then Yzerman said, forget it, and then went shopping again to bring in more players.
Yeah.
Because they're that close.
But back to your original point about like consequences. I don't know. I can't see the coach getting fired. You and I had this conversation. Their defense isn't good enough. Nope. It's a very no-name defense. And their goaltending is not good enough.
And you hang on, pause on the defense. You know what else they do? And I think that if you're Yzerman, you try to address this in the offseason. They play more at Sider. Heavy minutes. Against top competition.
Because they have nobody else to play those
games. Is he ready for that at this point in his career? We tend to forget. We tend to treat Moritz Seider like he's like this veteran who's been around forever.
He's been there 3 years.
Moritz Seider's only been in the NHL for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And he's getting workload like nobody else. Because to your point, no one else is going to be able to do it there.
No.
That to me is the big one for Detroit as well.
Yeah, like no disrespect to guys like Ben Chiarot and J- Jeff Petrie and Olimata. Like, they're fine. But that's not a defense that instills confidence that is going to win a playoff series. That's why they are where they are right now. Because for the longest time, they couldn't defend. Like, we can say what we want about Alex DeBrincat barely scored in the second half of the year. He's still going to finish with almost 30 goals in a year where he basically didn't score in the second half.
Yeah.
Dylan Larkin got hurt for a bit. Patrick Kane came in a little bit later. Mm-hmm. Like, offensively, I think they're fine. I think they have good balance. Like, I think guys like Joe Valeno and Robbie Fabry are they're good players on playoff teams. But defensively, I don't see how Derek Lalonde can be faulted for what's gone on with this team this year. The fact that they're in all likelihood going to miss the playoffs is just a lot that needs to go their way. But I can't see the coach getting fired. And like Elliot's pointed out, like, Steve Yzerman has been very patient. He was very patient with Jeff Blashill.
Mm-hmm.
I'd imagine he's going to be very patient with Derek Lalonde as well. Go get the man a goalie. Go get him another couple of defensemen and then see what he can do. Because I don't think he's been given a team that you can say, now there's no excuses.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is, does Patrick Kane go back?
I feel like yes.
You do? Based on what?
On no knowledge whatsoever, just a gut feel. I don't know. There's just something about, like, where's he going to go? Buffalo?
Well, that's the one. That's the one that I wonder about. Like, this is a team that's going to change its veteran mix, and this is a team that, like, as I mentioned off the top, it's a team that needs some players to push back, some veteran guys that can push back and say, "No, we're not doing things this way," or "This makes no sense." I know it's uncomfortable for coaches to have players like that. I get that. It's uncomfortable for managers to have coaches like that, but you need coaches like, you need players like that. Remember Bob Gainey. Bob Gainey used to always say that if you're a manager and you don't have headaches, you have a bad team.
Yeah.
He said something along the lines of, you know, headaches are a blessing because when you have great players, you have headaches. And you can't just cruise through a season and say, oh, this is nice and easy. No one's causing a ripple effect. Second guessing what we're doing here. Great players are tough to deal with, but that's the only way you're going to win. I never forgot when I first read that Gainey quote. It makes a lot of sense. If you have no headaches, you have a bad team. And isn't that what Buffalo needs right now? Some players to give coaches and managers a headache and be difficult.
Yeah. And you know where I would speak to that specifically is the group up front. Because there's a lot of talent there, but they're kind of just like, okay, this, we're set here. Like, the guy that's actually made that push is J.J. Paterka.
He had a great season. They need to be pushed.
Yeah, they need to be.
Forwards need to be pushed, and I think they need to figure out who Rasmus Dahlin is. Is he going to be the next captain, and does he want to be the captain of the Buffalo Sabres? I think they want him to be.
Didn't that feel like an Alex Tuch thing?
It kind of did, but I think everything's on the table this summer. I don't know about Alex Tuch. Is Alex Tuch coming back? I don't know.
I think he wants to.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not Alex Tuch.
No, I know. But he's an area kid. And
I get it.
I'm like, you know, I mean, not everybody loves it, but he loved it, clearly, going there from Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he probably would like to be in Vegas right now, but I don't speak for Alex Tuch. I do wonder about that veteran mix there because they don't... When you looked at it, they didn't really have a veteran mix. It's kind of a weird thing to say. Like, Kyle Okposo was there.
They brought
in Eric Johnson.
They brought in Eric
there.
Johnson.
But really, it was a very young team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who were the other veterans? Like, I guess we put Alex Tuch in that conversation.
Zemgus Girgensons, you throw into that mix? I know what you mean.
Zemgus Girgensons is the most interesting player in NHL history because you forget about him and like, oh yeah, he's been in Buffalo his entire career and he's probably not leaving.
I'm told I'm told the Pegula family loves him.
Oh yeah, I've heard the stories.
They really, really love Zemgus Girgensons. And listen, I remember having a conversation with someone about Boone Jenner around trade deadline time. And one person's from another team who said, look, the owner love him. The owners love him. In Columbus, he's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
The owners love Boone Jenner on this team.
Who historically were those guys? Like in the last, I feel like it's not a lot like that. They just say they're not going anywhere. Probably because they're a little bit more affordable than some other players. But
Well, listen, Mario Lemieux would always talk about, as long as I'm owner, Crosby retires a Penguin. Malkin retires a Penguin. Letang retires a Penguin.
But those are stars, though.
I know.
But I'm talking about, like, Boone Jenner. Again, no disrespect to Boone Jenner or Zemgus Girgensson, but they're not those guys. Mm-hmm. Boone Jenner is a more productive player offensively than Zemgus Girgensson is. But there are just some players that just manage to stick around. Again, I know the Zemgus Girgensson stuff, and one day somebody will learn the story about it, not saying nothing.
We'll get more on the Buffalo Sabres here coming up at the bottom of the hour. Mike Cajello joins us. And if you missed the news, Don Granato has been relieved of his head coaching responsibilities. Florida Panthers tonight face off against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and everybody's going to be eyeballing one thing.
Is that Anthony Stolarz going for the goal, the save percentage crown and the goals against crown?
Hey, listen, speaking of which, you talk about players that are going to get paid in the offseason. What's Anthony Stolarz going to get? He's been fantastic for them.
I know. And, I mean, if you're Florida, if you could make it work, why wouldn't you bring him back? I even
Spencer
at an increase.
Knight, because Spencer Knight looks
that's
so
true.
Great.
Yeah, that's true.
He's only so long he leaves
yeah,
Spencer
Yeah, you know,
Knight.
You forget about Spencer Knight, actually.
Well, he's just a first-round pick and, you know, golden
No,
future,
I know, but I know he was in the program last year and he yep. dealt with some things personally. But you do forget that it's like he's getting paid a lot of money, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing we do forget. But, yeah, but Stolarz, he's been incredible.
So, Austin Matthews chasing 70 goals here.
Yeah, that's the real one. Sorry.
So, here's what we wonder about. And we all think of, you know, making sure that players are rested before the playoffs. It sounds like the Maple Leafs will probably open up on Saturday. I don't think anyone should be surprised. So, if he doesn't score against the Florida Panthers,
huh.
Do you put him in game 82 against the Tampa Bay Lightning?
They're going to. Like, the question for me is, what does Tampa's lineup look like on that night? Like we talked about before, Kucherov is playing because mm-hmm. he's going for 100 assists. Like, is Stamkos playing? Is Victor Hedman playing? I would venture a guess that those two guys are not playing. Tampa can't go anywhere in the standings. Kucherov will play. Maybe Braden Point will play.
Will he?
Maybe. Keep that line together so that Kucherov has someone to play with. But I could envision a scenario in which Austin Matthews...
Yeah.
Let's face it. Austin Matthews is scoring 70 tonight.
You think?
He's going to fire 72 shots at the net tonight. Like, that's what... It feels like any time... And the one thing I made this comment to somebody... Even though it does feel like he's shooting a lot, he's not taking bad shots either. Like, there are guys that really try and force it. It doesn't feel like he is.
Here's the thing that I want to get to. We always hear around playoff time, leading into the playoffs, it's not about the wins and the losses. How many times do you hear a coach say this? It's not about the wins and losses. We just need to have our playoff habits right.
Yeah, they haven't played very well.
Well, and here's the other thing. Like, they're force-feeding passes to Austin Matthews.
They sure are.
Like, but the thing is, like, what is everyone thinking the minute that Matthews is on the ice? Just get him the puck. And then you see, like, you know, Marner take a shot and everyone goes like, what are you doing?
Yeah, he's playing the game, people. I saw that the other night. Like, there was one play, and Austin Matthews scored on this play, but Max Domi legitimately had the puck in the slot with nobody in front of him and made a very tough pass to Austin Matthews, and he ended up scoring. But it's like, that happens all too often. It's very mm-hmm. comical. The power play is where it's the worst. Because that is where you're like, and everybody knows because
everyone
knows. You can see the defensive shift over to Matthew's side, and he's got to go do the wait in the weeds thing and move around.
And go hide and then come back and surprise, here I am.
But I do, in a very roundabout way, I do think he's playing against Tampa.
Regardless.
If he does not score. If he scores then tonight, he's not playing.
We shall see. Number of intriguing games on the board this evening. The Ottawa Senators face off against the Boston Bruins. One of the things we probably should go over here on this program, so deep into it already.
The old clinching scenario.
Oh, the clinching scenario. So just so everybody has these in their hip pocket for tonight. Again, we mentioned the Washington Capitals control their fate, right? If they beat Montreal, if they beat the Philadelphia Flyers,
it's over. But this is where it gets interesting.
So there's a lot here.
Write this down.
Detroit. All right. So if they beat Montreal in any fashion, they clinch wild card 2. If the Capitals lose to the Philadelphia Flyers in any fashion, Detroit wins and the Capitals only get a point. No good. The Pittsburgh Penguins, no clinching scenario. They're watching.
Yeah, because they have to win tomorrow night.
They will be eliminated if the Caps or the Red Wings win in any fashion tonight.
That's the worst.
Philadelphia. Regulation win, eliminated if Detroit gets at least 1 point against the Montreal Canadiens. So they need a regulation win. Any other result, eliminated.
But are they in if they win, or do they have to wait for Pittsburgh result?
They have to wait.
How about if you're Philly right now, Jeff? Like they had the easiest schedule.
They did the most Philly thing ever. They beat all the hard teams and then bowed out against everybody else. Like, they also ran.
Oh my goodness. They shouldn't be in this situation. But anyway. And then we have
clinching scenarios for playoff seeding.
Yeah, for who plays who. Because Islanders and Carolina is done, correct?
Yes. Islanders and Carolina is done.
That one's happened.
That's your opening round. And also, you know, the Colorado Avalanche facing off against the Winnipeg Jets.
Yes.
That one is done. But the Jets can clinch number 2 seed in the Central if they get at least 1 point against the Kraken tonight.
Which they should.
The Stars, who are idle, they're not playing tonight, they will clinch the Western Conference title if the Vancouver Canucks lose to the Calgary Flames in any fashion this evening. Canucks will clinch the division title if they get at least 1 point against the Flames. The Preds will clinch wild card 1 in the Western Conference if the Golden Knights lose to the Blackhawks in any fashion there.
How do you like if you're Vancouver or Dallas? If you win your division, your treat is a rested Preds team or a getting healthier Vegas team. Like, have fun with that. Have fun. That's great.
But that's the whole Western Conference.
I know. It's just like...
Western Conference is full of killers. Western Conference is, I don't want to play anybody.
Yeah.
Everyone is a nightmare.
How do you feel? But you're those teams, you're like, we did all this work. And look, can we have more teams in the playoffs, please?
Stop, Elliot.
We want bad teams so we can play them.
Stop, Elliot.
That's your reward for 111 or 113 points.
So first-round matchups that could be locked up today. The Rangers will face the Washington Capitals. That will lock if the Capitals clinch a playoff spot tonight. So if the Capitals beat the Philadelphia Flyers, they're playing the New York Rangers in the first round.
Well, I want to see what that
lock.
What's that season series been? I feel like that's been close.
Rangers versus Red Wings locked if Detroit clinches this playoff spot. So Rangers are playing. I mean, listen, they just wrapped up the President's Trophy yesterday. Either the Capitals or the Detroit Red Wings. Bruins would face off against Tampa. Florida would face off against the Maple Leafs. Locked if the Bruins clinch the Atlantic Division title. Panthers in Tampa. Bruins versus Maple Leafs. Locked if Florida clinches the Atlantic Division title.
This season series between Washington and New York.
Yeah.
Split. 4-0 Caps. 5-1 Rangers. 3-2 Caps. 2-1 Rangers.
Does anybody give either the Capitals or the Red Wings any chance against the New York Rangers? Essentially what I'm asking is, could either of those two teams be the Florida Panthers?
No.
Why?
The Florida Panthers still have, like, Barkov and Tkachuk and, like, go down the list. Like, it was a very good team.
Capitals have Ovechkin and Carlson, and the Detroit Red Wings have Dylan Larkin and Alex DeBrincat.
I didn't finish, though.
Okay.
That was the difference. Like,
okay.
Then there was Ekblad and Montour, and they also had something that I don't think that either of those teams have. Maybe you can make the argument for Charlie Lindgren. I don't think Detroit has the goalie that can get hot. Not like Bobrovsky did. Like, that was next level.
They have Alex Lyon, the same goaltender that got the Florida Panthers into the playoffs in the first place.
But what happened when he got into the playoffs?
They went to Bobrovsky, like, the minute there was a sniff of doubt about
Alex
Lyon.
And then from there, Bobrovsky took him to the cup final. The guy is a Vezina Trophy winner before.
But could you not see Charlie Lindgren having that run?
That's the only guy that of the ones that are there that I could say, okay, maybe. But then I look at the team in front of him and say, that's not Florida in front of him.
But we tend to forget Florida wasn't Florida all season long.
But Florida won the President's Trophy the year before.
The year before they did that.
It was a good team. Washington was not a good team last year. Detroit wasn't a good team last year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my argument. Like, I hate this, they could be Florida. Okay, were they a President's Trophy winner the year before? Nah. So they're not Florida.
The irony of that is, who was the original team to do that of the past 30 years? The New York Rangers.
Right.
Who won the President's Trophy, didn't make the playoffs, and then won the Stanley Cup in 94.
Mm-hmm.
That was that team.
Yeah. Those teams just don't instill a lot of confidence. Like, maybe stylistically, Washington can kind of lull you to sleep a little bit. I don't think Detroit can do that. Because I think Detroit relies on their offense more than Washington does. Because Washington doesn't have the same type of horses as Detroit does up front.
Would be fun to see Ovechkin in the playoffs, though.
Yeah, I thought it would be great to see Sidney Crosby in the playoffs, too.
Yeah, we've totally left that. That game against the Boston Bruins was just such a killer for them on the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
That was the one that just took them totally out.
Again, imagine if you're the Philadelphia Flyers in all of this, Jeff. If they had one win, like, against Columbus or Montreal.
I know.
Those two games where they got waxed. Yep. You're looking at it going, well, Philadelphia's in the driver's seat here. Probably 1 point and they're in.
Yeah. I don't see any consequences there, though.
No. And I don't think there should be.
Even though it's an epic collapse.
Yeah, no. I think that's a sign of, I don't want to say an immature group, but a group that's not ready yet. I think the coach got the most out of them.
Yeah.
And I think there's more on the horizon for this group.
But do you not get the feeling that he got the most out of them because he whipped them the hardest? And then by the end, they had nothing left.
Yeah, but I agree, and I think that's a learning experience. And I don't even think it's a learning experience for John Tortorella. I think he needed
you
to.
You don't?
Do that. No. I think that because this was a year where you could try that, and then you see who's sticking around, Jeff. Yeah. I don't think John Tortorella. I think he learns, like, I can do this, but I don't think he says I would do anything differently. I really don't think John Tortorella thinks that way.
It's funny too, because there's some thought out there that this year, and how the Philadelphia Flyers played under Tortorella and what Tortorella did to get to the Philadelphia Flyers to that position and what the cost was, I think for the first time, people are looking at this situation and saying, again, for the first time, when this Philadelphia Flyers team is consistently good, maybe it's not John Tortorella behind the bench.
Might not be. It might not be.
There's a coach that gets you there, and then there's your coach.
And how many coaches have we seen that with?
Chicago Blackhawks, Denny Savard, Joel Quenneville.
Yeah. What about Tampa Bay? Guy Boucher?
Yeah.
John Cooper?
All right. We'll hit a break, get back on the Buffalo Sabres page. They fired their coach today. Mike Cosciello from the Hockey News comments in moments. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network simulcast on Sportsnet 360 or wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. Okay, so the news of the day outside of various clinching scenarios and a big one tonight between the Washington Capitals and the Philadelphia Flyers. The big news off the ice has been the dismissal of Don Granato as the head coach of the Buffalo Sabres. Here to sharpen the pencil on it and maybe speculate on what's next for the Buffalo Sabres on and off the ice is Mike Cosciello from the Hockey News, who covers those same swords, Mike, we've been talking about all season long. First of all, good afternoon. Thanks, as always, for popping by. And secondly, I don't think anyone should be surprised by this necessarily, either the timing or the fact that it happened. But the one thing that's curious is this is a coach that has some term left on his deal. How much of a wild card, if anything at all, do you think was that going into this decision for Kevin Adams?
Good afternoon, Jeff. I thought, and I continued to think that was going to be a determining factor in whether Don Granato was going to be back, is the fact that he signed a 2-year extension back in 2022. And Terry Pegula, I know that the Ralph Kruger situation, when he was let go, he had term left in his deal, and that was something that he didn't particularly like. And I know that Granato was liked both by Kevin Adams and by Pegula, but I think that the way things decompensated this season and the disappointment that came with them finishing 2 games over .500 and missing the playoffs by multiple points, I think that was, in the end, what cost Don Granato his job.
I was going to say, we all sort of point to sort of reasons here, Mike. Okay, so why did they make this decision? And clearly this was, a team that underperformed based on expectations, and that's one. I do wonder, many will point to the, sort of force-feeding Devon Levi NHL games when he wasn't ready for it, although I won't pin all of that on Don Granato. I don't think decisions like that are made just by the coach. I think that those are organizational decisions I think that, you know, Kevin Adams probably shares in that decision specifically. But when you sort of break down the Buffalo Sabres season, maybe some key moments, like what goes into, in your mind, I mean, you're there every day, practices and games, et cetera. Like what goes into this decision from Buffalo's point of view?
Well, like you said, I mean, going back to last summer, and we talked about this the last time I was on the show, they decided to bring the entire band back. They lost Jack Quinn right at the NHL draft. He had an off-season Achilles injury, but they decided to re-sign Tyson Jost, re-sign Kyle Okposo, re-sign Zemgus Girgensons, and the only changes they really made were the tweaking moves of Eric Johnson on a one-year deal and Connor Clifton. They didn't make any grand additions, and I thought that, you know, being 1 point away from a playoff spot last year, that they needed to make one significant move to sort of put them over the top. They decided to not do that and relied on Devin Levi being the number one goalie. And I think early on, they recognized that that was probably a mistake, but it took them till the middle of January to go to Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen as the number one goaltender. And since that point, they've been pretty consistent and played really well. They really dug themselves a hole early in the season. And I mean, by January, like most people around here thought they weren't going to make the playoffs, even though they got to within 3 points a couple times. The season was lost early on. And I think the season, in a sense, was lost during the summer.
When we look at this year's edition of the Buffalo Sabres, we come out of it wondering, okay, there's no Kyle Okposo here. Who's going to be the next captain of this team? It seems to come down to two players, either Rasmus Dahlin or Alex Tuch. I would wonder if I'm the Buffalo Sabres, if I'm changing my veteran mix and how. But one of the things that I do know is I've invested heavily in Rasmus Dahlin. I guess the question is, does he even want it? But when we look at, you know, what the leadership group of the Buffalo Sabres are going to look like next season, who are the names that you wonder about here, Mike?
Well, I agree with your assessment to determine whether Dahlin wants it. I mean, I sort of compare Dahlin in a sense to another Swedish captain in Mats Sundin. I mean, Mats Sundin was a sort of quiet guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he handled the media well, but I don't think he was something he really gravitated towards. No. Everything I understood, he was very good in the locker room with his teammates, but I think the fan base, you know, wants a more vocal captain. Kyle Okposo never hesitated to talk to the media after losses, always took up the mantle. And Alex Tuch, since Okposo's trade, has assumed that role. You know, Rasmus Dahlin, he never shirks away from the media. He's a good guy. He's well-spoken. But I don't know whether the hunger to be that guy is there. He is clearly the best player on this roster. They've invested $11 million a year on an 8-year deal. And I think you're right. I think the organization wants that to be the case in terms of him taking that leadership role. But sometimes the best player isn't the best captain. And I don't know whether, you know, like Connor McDavid in Edmonton, you know, like other players who are top players in their organizations, I don't know whether this is the best thing for Rasmus Dahlin, but the organization seems to want him to be the guy.
We're going to hear a lot of talk about Seth Appert. I've mentioned head coach of the Rochester Americans. I can see a scenario where they bring up Seth Appert and place a veteran coach as his assistant or associate. Like, I don't know if they can get Jeff Blashill out of Tampa, maybe with an improved position instead of assistant coach, it's associate coach. And that's the move up that frees him from Tampa. We know there's a relationship there going back to Ferris State when they were the two goaltenders for that team, but something along those lines that would make sense to me from that point of view. Also going to hear the name Lindy Ruff a lot. Probably also hear the name Joel Quenneville, most recently on the Cam and Strick podcast, even though he hasn't been allowed to interview for NHL jobs. I think a lot of us suspect that it's only a matter of time before Quenneville is back behind a Buffalo bench. What seems to be the talk, the scuttlebutt in Buffalo about, okay, Granato is out, who comes in?
Well, you're definitely on the mark when it comes to Appert. You know, the perception here, though, and it may be wrong because he's an excellent coach, he's done a really good job in Rochester, is he's of the same vintage, of the same lineage as Granato, comes from the U.S. developmental program, college, now AHL. I know Granato was an assistant in the NHL. Yeah. And I know it's perceived by the fan base that this is sort of Granato 2.0. And I think a lot, you know, a lot of the talk around here is, you know, obviously Tortorella's got a job in Philadelphia and I don't think he's getting fired. But the one name that was mentioned as who is possibly available if his contract elapses is Rod Brind'Amour. He's connected with Kevin Adams going back to their days in Carolina. Now, I don't know how much of a hunger is that for Brind'Amour to leave that situation where it's a team that's challenging for a Stanley Cup. Yeah. But, you know, Brind'Amour's name has been mentioned. I know that, and this would be, you know, going down a road that I don't think they want to go down, but former Sabre Michael Pekka, who was an assistant in Rochester, now an assistant to Peter Laviolette, with the Rangers. I know that Paul Hamilton, who was a longtime Buffalo reporter, was mentioning Pekka as somebody that was in the mix. Mm-hmm. But I think the likely candidate and the favorite is Appert. It's just, you know, he's involved right now with Rochester. They could make a deep run in the Calder Cup playoffs. Are you really going to wait until the, you know, mid to late May and hold yourself off in terms of in talking to other coaches because you've set yourself on Seth Appert, or are you going to go and talk to people while he's busy with the Amherst?
It's interesting. And, you know, the other thing that we wonder about too, I mean, the coaching piece is just one piece of this puzzle for the Buffalo Sabres. I wonder at what point, and maybe they just don't, maybe they just like organizationally, they're not going to change their philosophy. But Kevin Adams has gone on record a number of different times and said, like, look, this is going to be a process of draft and develop. But then you get to a certain point, Mike, and I think it certainly feels like we're there with the Buffalo Sabres, where they're knocking on the door of a playoff spot and being a consistent playoff team, where you say to yourself, okay, you know what? We need to turn some of these, you know, green bananas into yellow bananas here. And I wonder at what point, because you look at, you know, you mentioned Rochester, a lot of good young players there still. At what point you start to say, we have a lot of young players in this organization. Maybe it's time to start looking at them, not just as future players for the Buffalo Sabres, but as assets to turn into veteran or more established guys that can help the lineup now. Now, that would be a break with organizational philosophy. Kevin Adams has been pretty specific about that. But what do you think the next step here is for the Buffalo Sabres? Veteran mix, turning younger players into more established guys. They can help the roster right now. What do you think happens in the offseason here?
Well, I think all options have to be open. And you can't ignore what another team in the city of Buffalo, who is also owned by Terry Pegula, just did. Yeah. You know, the Buffalo Bills moved out Mitch Morris, Jordan Poyer, Tre'Davious White, traded Stephon Diggs. There was a genuine changeover in the veteran mix of that team. And the possibility of them, you know, they've never bought out, you know, they don't buy out players, but, you know, there's been rumors about, you know, them trying to maybe trade or buy out Jeff Skinner, about, you know, there were rumors about trading Alex Tuch at the trade deadline. Yeah. I mean, they have to have veterans to surround some of these younger players, and they do have this new wave of Yuri Kulich and Roseanne and Matthew Savoy and Anton Wahlberg. There's a lot of young players, but you can't just keep feeding the young players into the garbage compactor. I mean, you know, you need to surround them with veteran support players, and that's something that I think has really been lacking with this team. I don't think they can draw players through free agency. I know that there was a talk of them making a deal at the deadline and a player exercise their no move clause to not come to Buffalo. So, you know, you're going to have to be able to trade players who don't have that restriction. And I mean, you have to make Buffalo a place that players want to come to, and 13 years of no playoffs, you know, they're getting to be a place that some players don't want to come to.
I wonder about the fans through all of this. And listen, Mike, you and I have talked about this plenty. I've talked about this on the air. Every year at the beginning of the season, I always say, I really want the Buffalo Sabres to be good, because I can't think of another fan base in the NHL right now that deserves a good team more so than the Buffalo Sabres. This is an organization that has false started their fans so many different times, gone through numerous, you know, incarnations of what a rebuild could look like. And now that they just get this close, and this was supposed to be the season where they took the next step, at the end of it, they're firing a coach. Outside of winning, which, as we all know, you know, that drives the that draws the insects to the flame. But outside of winning, what can the Sabres do for their fans here?
Well, it's funny because you know that you're in trouble when your fan base switches from anger to apathy. And yeah. I think it's starting to get to that point now in Buffalo where, like, everybody's looking towards the NFL draft. It's, you know, April 16th and everybody's looking to that. And they started looking at that a couple weeks ago, even before they were eliminated. There's genuine anger about this team. You know, there was excitement last year. They got to within one point of the playoffs. You know, there was talk about, well, why didn't they make a trade for a goaltender at the trade deadline? Get, you know, break the losing skid. They didn't do that. Now I think it's gotten to the point where, you know, the fans started not showing up in December and January when they, you know, were resigned to the fact this team wasn't going to make the playoffs. I think, you know, ownership and management have to recognize that the fan base is getting to the point of apathy and has to make some sort of bold move, whether it's a big name coach, whether it's a big time free agent or a big trade, to get excitement with this team. Because right now, if you just keep recycling these good young prospects and nothing changes, it's just going to continue to be apathy.
So, you know, the name then, like, you can't set that up, Mike, and not have me say the name Patrick Kane. Are we going to hear a lot about Patrick Kane in the offseason?
Well, reportedly they were in on him, and he chose Detroit over Buffalo. And, you know, DeBrincat being his old teammate from the Blackhawks, and, you know, I think a lot of people perceive, I mean, at the beginning of the season, everybody perceived Detroit and Buffalo sort of on an equal footing when it came to making the playoffs. And Kane chose Detroit, and, I mean, Detroit is within a point of making the playoffs, and Buffalo is well out of it. I mean, there's always been talk of him coming home and helping this team. I wouldn't hold my breath. I just get the feeling that he wants to go someplace else. He doesn't want to come here and be the savior. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes back to New York or goes to Toronto, play with Austin Matthews or someplace like that to try to win another Stanley Cup. But I don't know whether he wants to come back to Buffalo and have the pressure of breaking the 13-year playoff skid.
Okay, let me ask you about one play. I got about 90 seconds for this one, Michael. See if we can do it in a hot 90. Okay. How did you see the Devon Levi situation this year? You know, I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, it seemed like they were force-feeding him NHL games. That he wasn't really ready for. Like, Don Granato seemed determined. It was almost like walking into a hat shop, only finding one hat, and you tried to force it to fit on your head. Is that the way it felt for you, or how did you see the Devon Levi situation otherwise?
They seemed locked in on Levi being the number one from the beginning of training camp. And like I said, it was understandable because Luukkonen was not consistent last year. And Levi came in and was 5-2 in his 7 games at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So I could understand that point of view. But again, a 21-year-old goaltender coming out of the NCAA, it was just asking too much. And the funny thing is the possibility of them making the playoffs may have ended when Luukkonen got sick in November. They seemed to be going toward him as the starter, and he got sick, and they called Levi back up, and Levi stayed for another month, and they kept going back and forth. Had Luukkonen taken the job in November, they might be in the playoffs right now because he has played remarkably consistent, and had he stayed as the starter at that point and they kept Levi down, maybe they would have piled up a couple more wins, and they'd be in the race.
That is going to be a fascinating contract, Mike. Like, and he's got arbitration rights, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. That is going to be one fascinating contract this season because he did a lot of great work for the Buffalo Sabres.
I think they go to arbitration and it's a 1-year deal. And they walk him toward unrestricted free agency because I think that they like Levi, and I think that you know they appreciate what Luukkonen did, but I think they're gonna do the same thing they did with Mittelstadt. They'll walk him 1 year closer to UFA and see what they get out of him.
Interesting times. Thanks for sharing your expertise and your insight. Mike Augello, you be well. It's not a dull time at all to be a Buffalo Sabres fan today, releasing Don Granato, relieving him of his duties. Thanks as always, Mike. We'll check back soon.
Thanks, Jeff.
There he is, Mike Cogello from the Hockey News. A couple of things. Tonight, a couple of intriguing games. And the big one is on Sportsnet, and that is the Washington Capitals and the Philadelphia Flyers. Watch that one at 7 o'clock Eastern. Also, later tonight, Sportsnet 360, the Chicago Blackhawks take on the Vegas Golden Knights, the Calgary Flames, and the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet West and Pacific. Thanks to everyone who took part in today's program. All of our guests, Mike Cogello, Daryl Evans, Los Angeles Kings analyst, and Elliot Friedman. Thanks to Matt Marchese, Lance Kennedy, and Jen Rolnick. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Tonight's going to be fascinating. Like, Philadelphia, Washington is going to be excellent. And you know there's going to be that burning intensity in Detroit and Montreal. Enjoy it. We're back tomorrow, noon Eastern, across the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. It's the Merrick Show. Talk to you in 22 hours.